Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. This is your host, Jason Staples. Got a couple things going on in this show today. First, going to start with some question and answer, a little bit of talk about recruiting. Going to blaze through some of that and then do a little bit of a preview of the NC State game with James Henderson from PacPride.com. But let's go ahead and get started. Let's go ahead and get to these questions and to some recruiting talk. First question actually is a recruiting question, going back to basically the Clemson game. I got a question from Cubs fan that is at KBright underscore saying, despite the loss, did the game against Clemson have an overall positive impact on the athletes that took their official visit to the game? Short answer to that question is abso-freaking-lutely. This was a huge recruiting weekend. Florida State had a tremendous amount of talent on campus. And I got word this week that the visits went better than the Florida State staff, than those in the program could have hoped coming in. There's still obviously some concern about some other moving pieces, and things are very early. But Florida State is in the game for some serious, serious talent after this weekend. One of the things that I got from one of my sources was that bringing all of the Texas guys together, and Florida State had arguably the top four recruits, top four prospects in the state of Texas, all on campus together with their families. Bringing all those guys together was apparently a really, really good move because a few of those guys really got along well, gelled well, their families got along well, and it turned out to be a really good atmosphere. And it didn't hurt that Houston native Dontavius Jackson played nearly the entire game and played awfully well as a true freshman. And this is a guy that has some pretty significant impact on a couple of these guys, particularly Marvin Wilson, who's also from Houston. And I think you can make the case that Wilson is the best defensive tackle prospect in the country. Now, he's not Dexter Lawrence, who was the best defensive tackle prospect in the country last year and is now dominating teams, including Florida State, for Clemson. But he's, I think, in the same kind of range as your Eddie Goldmans or your Timmy Jernigans. So, and yes, that does mean that I think that that Dexter Lawrence is better than those guys. And you know, I think Dexter Lawrence is a top five overall draft pick, most likely, as long as he stays healthy and continues to develop. Heck, he might be a top 10 draft pick if he left after his freshman year. But Wilson is, I think, one of those guys that is a Jernigan or a Eddie Goldman type who can come in and contribute right away. And there aren't many of those guys. Those are guys that you win championships with. And I think after this weekend, from what I've gathered, Florida State, if not in the driver's seat, is in the co-pilot seat for Marvin Wilson, which is absolutely huge. I think he's maybe the most important prospect left on Florida State's board that is not currently committed, partly because he's one of those bell cow guys that might bring a couple others with him. The thing that maybe surprised me the most was that linebacker Baron Browning, who I think, again, you could make a case, is the best linebacker prospect in the country. I'm not sure whether, you know, you can make a case. Like I said, you can make a case. There are a couple others that are in the same discussion, but I think without question, he's a top five linebacker prospect in the country. And he's, I think, a better prospect coming in than Dontavius Jackson was last year. So when you look at that, that guy is, you know, he's a tremendous player, tremendous prospect. And when he was coming on his official visit, my initial reaction was, oh, that's nice. I mean, I guess you always have a chance as long as there's as long as you get a guy on campus, you got a chance. But, you know, odds are not very good that Florida State's going to have any real chance at this guy. Well, Apparently, it went really, really well with Baron Browning. And Florida State is now thoroughly in the mix for him. And that's another guy that, I mean, listen, you all know my take on this. Those who've listened to this program for very long know my take on this in terms of freshmen playing early. Those guys are rare. Guys that can come in and contribute early are rare. They're exceptions. You don't expect guys to come in and contribute early. Well, both Wilson and Browning are guys that wherever they go, I expect them to contribute early. Maybe not at an Alabama, who has just a little bit more depth in some of those at those positions. But those guys could come in and contribute, maybe not start, but certainly be in the mix in their freshman seasons. And both of them now are legitimately in the mix for Florida State to land at this point. And that, like I said, I would not have expected that coming out of this weekend. Browning, actually, in a lot of respects, Browning would be a really dang good replacement for Vandarius Cowan, who was committed to Florida State for a while and then decommitted and committed to Alabama. Browning is very much in the same mode. I mean, very, very much in the same kind of body type. Cowan is about 6'4", 225. Browning 6'3", about 230. But Browning might be a little better. So, you know, that's where you start looking at it and going, okay, now you're starting to cook with some gas here if you're Florida State on the recruiting side. Another player that it went really, really well with was Cam Akers, who came in with his family yet again. This is not his first time on campus with his family. And he got to watch Dalvin Cook run wild and watch Florida State stick with the run with Dalvin Cook, even when they were down 14, and got to see basically an image of what he could do. And I think he's the best running back prospect in the country this year. Reminds me a lot of Deuce McAllister. And he's an early enrollee, which matters even more because that means you put him in the mix as an early enrollee. A second semester freshman is a totally different game, totally different situation. I consider those guys basically more like sophomores. They're closer to sophomores. If he's able to get a full spring under his belt, then I think he splits carries as a freshman. He's on the field a bunch. So that's three guys who could play early that were on campus together that it went extremely well for. Another guy, another Texas guy, and another guy that's close to Marvin Wilson was Walker, the offensive tackle prospect. He's probably a top two offensive tackle prospect in the country. Has a chance to be really, really good. I've been impressed by how polished he is at this phase of his career. But again, he's a guy that Florida State is Walker Little is his full name, Walker Little. You're looking at a 6'8", 305-pound offensive tackle who already has the ability to anchor and move his feet, and you know he has excellent bend for a guy with that kind of length, which Florida State always covets. This is one of the top two or three offensive tackle prospects in the country. Florida State, I don't think, leads, but they did enough to, again, be to give themselves a puncher's chance here. And it's one of those things where if another couple of those guys decides to join the class, it may swing this kid. Now, ultimately, if I had to bet on it, I think the kid winds up at Stanford. It's one of those things where, you know, he's got the chance, he's got the academics to get into Stanford. And when you have a full ride to Stanford, that's really tough to turn down, particularly as an offensive lineman where they've had a pretty good record. But Florida State gave him a lot to think about. And, you know, Florida State's academics are really good, particularly their plan for athletes. And apparently that was very impressive to Walker Little and his family. Florida State has a shot. And that's as much as they could ask for with that kid coming out of Texas, coming into this weekend. Same thing with, you know, Nasirildeen, the big safety from North Carolina. He's still committed to South Carolina, but again, Florida State gave him a lot to think about. These guys all, basically Florida State took their swing and gave themselves a chance. And, you know, you can throw Jeffrey Okuda in there, who I think is still going to wind up at Ohio State most likely. But again, they gave it their best crack, and they're not off the board yet. And, you know, I was told, you know, the fact that it was Halloween weekend in Tallahassee didn't hurt things either. So, you know, between FAMU and it being Halloween weekend, and then the atmosphere for the Clemson game, which I think apparently surprised some of the Texas guys, some of the guys, the out-of-state guys, who weren't aware that, you know, non-SEC, non-Texas environments could look like that. Those guys wound up pretty impressed over the course of the official visit weekend. So, long answer to that question. That was the long answer. Short answer is it went about as well as you could hope a recruiting weekend to go, especially on a loss. This was a win of a recruiting weekend for Florida State. Gave themselves a chance at four or five kids that are that could actually come in and contribute early, which, given what they've already got on campus for the out of the 2015 and 2016 classes, that would be a pretty good recipe. Okay, second question. Serious question. This is from KJ Clever Halloween Pun. That is at BNOKJ. Serious question, no snark. Is it, what happened against Clemson, actual improvement by the defense, or did they just not quit? Noted that not quitting is an improvement. Well, not quitting was an improvement, and that was present, but there was definite defensive improvement. Florida State over the last 5 weeks has really gotten a lot better, particularly on defense. And you can see that the guys actually are starting to understand what they're supposed to do. Some of those young guys, particularly in the back seven, who hadn't played much, who hadn't played the roles that they're in, those guys understand things a lot more. And it wasn't until Florida State was playing with a series of really inexperienced players again, and in some combinations that they hadn't had to play previous to that, once Trey Marshall went out, that they gave up those big plays late. So yeah, the defense improved pretty significantly, and you know, that was against a very good Clemson offense. Kevin, that's at Chugalug, asks, I was thinking they should have bled the clock after Freddie's run and played for a field goal, left Clemson with too much time. Your thoughts? That's a tough question. I think in general, you want to avoid playing for a field goal. You want to avoid bleeding the clock too much. I mean, Clemson had timeouts, so if Florida State had taken that approach, I imagine they'd have probably started taking him. I think you've got to, at that point in the game, you've got to go ahead and score the touchdown. And had they gotten the two-point conversion, which was there, then Clemson does no more than tie. So, I mean, I think, had it been me, I'd have probably tried to slow tempo a little bit, but I'd have still wanted to score. And, you know, you just got to roll the dice and figure that Clemson's not going to be able to go down the field, you know, the way that they did. And you know, you, frankly, had Clemson not gotten turned a third and 20 into a conversion in two plays, Florida State wins the game anyway. So, I think that's one you could make a case for, though. You could certainly make a case that they should have just bled the clock and played for a field goal. But, I mean, again, look at how that worked out for NC State. So, you know, NC State missed the field goal at the gun, and it went, you know, and ended up losing that game by doing exactly that. So, you know, do you ever really want to trust hashtag college kickers? I mean, that's the thing. So, let's see. Noel Esk asks, this is in reference to the offensive line not being accusatory. So what is this issue and why don't they relate back to Trickett? So why don't the issues on the offensive line relate back to Trickett? Well, they do relate back to Trickett, but that doesn't mean that Trickett's a bad coach. The biggest problems that Florida State's had on the offensive line has been recruiting over the past few years. It took a while for them to really be able to start convincing top-level talent to come to Tallahassee. And then when they lost four guys to the NFL in one year, that they didn't have the talent on the roster, thanks in large measure to the 2012 and 2013 recruiting classes. They didn't have the talent on the roster to be able to replace that right away. And so some guys got pushed into service a little bit earlier than they should have, and they didn't have the 4- and 5-star guys waiting in the wings to replace that NFL talent. Now they have 4- and 5-star guys waiting in the wings and developing, and they've done a good thing by not forcing those guys onto the field right away. But those guys are going to be competing for jobs this spring and this fall, and if they are an improvement, then they'll play. They're not going to be an improvement at this point. The thing you have to remember with the offensive line is almost like one organism, and anytime you make a change there, it can really disrupt things, and you have to get to the point where you're playing as a unit, and you try to put the best five out there early in the season. They tried to put the five that they thought might develop into the best with Rick Leonard out there. In the first couple of games, it was pretty clear that he was not developing as fast as they'd hoped. And so they put Rubel in, who was a little bit further ahead, but you know, they thought maybe he didn't have as much room for growth early in the season as Leonard did. So, but they pulled the plug on that and went with the guys that they thought were the best five. And that included actually until he tore his ACL this week, unfortunately, which affects next year quite a bit. Landon Dickerson, a true freshman, was one of the best five. They're willing to play true freshmen. If they're one of the best five, they're going to be out there. But the thing is, those guys who aren't playing right now, who are redshirting or whatever, those guys are going to be competing to be in that lineup next year. And they're going to be that depth that they've developed with the last, particularly this last recruiting class, is going to start paying dividends next year. That's where you start to really see the payoff as you get linemen in their second and third years on campus. All right, Carl Richards, that is Carlo Royale at Carlo Royale, asked, what was your biggest offensive and defensive takeaway from the game? Offensive takeaway is Dalvin Cook's really, really good. And also that Florida State, it reinforced that Florida State's weaknesses on offense are unfortunately of the kind that reinforce one another, where you have some inaccuracy and inconsistency from the quarterback position, and the inability to pass protect well from the offensive line, and actually, you know, also the tight ends and running backs, not just the offensive line, that make it so that if Florida State's not on schedule and is not and gets behind the sticks at all, then they're basically screwed because they can't do anything on passing downs at this point because of the combination of the quarterback and offensive line right now. That was one big offensive takeaway. The defensive takeaway was that Florida State's defensive line has really grown as those guys have gotten healthy up front, and it's really too bad that they didn't get that level of health and effort early in the year. They may have beaten Louisville, because now that those guys are playing with that level of intensity, that level of effort, they ate Clemson's offensive line alive most of that game and held them in check in a way that was really impressive. And the other big takeaway is that Florida State's freshmen are going to be really, really good on that side of the ball. Dontavius Jackson, Levante Taylor, even Kyle Myers, who blew an assignment that cost him late, but still continues to be a good figure back there, good body back there. You know, Burns, another guy. There's a lot of freshman defensive talent that came in on that team. Finally, you got the last one I'll take today. At Scott Duran asks, is it time to start playing younger players even more in preparation for next year? Yes and no. I think that at certain places, like at running back and at wide receiver, I think they should start rotating those guys a little bit more. You know, you want to start getting Keith Gavin some reps. You want to start getting some of the younger receivers a little bit more reps, particularly once you get any sort of lead. You start expanding the rotation there. You start giving Jacquez Patrick more carries. You give Amir Rasul some carries. I think you do start to do some of those things. On the offensive line, I don't think that's really the case. I think, you know, a lot of those young guys, it's better not to throw them out there and let them either get hurt or ruined early because they're not physically or mentally ready. I think on in the defensive secondary, they could continue to put some guys out there, maybe give Becker some reps, continue to put Levante Taylor out there a bit more. So yes and no, I think that they can continue to get more young guys in the game in certain places, but not in others. So mostly at the skill spots, yes. Include a wider rotation, but on the offensive line at least, not as much. I think, again, you have to, partly because you've got to at least try to protect DeAndre Francois the rest of the season. All right, with that part out of the way, let's go ahead and transition to the discussion with James Henderson from PackPride.com, previously recorded a little bit earlier today. Lots of interesting things to say about the Florida State-NC State game coming up on Saturday. Joining me now here on the Unconquered podcast is James Henderson from PackPride.com, the Scout Network affiliate for NC State football and basketball and anything else Wolfpack. James, good to have you with us.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Well, we'll see how things are going after this weekend, but I don't think either program is exactly where they wanted to be or hoped to be at the beginning of the season. So I'll just say I'm okay.
Yeah, man, I'm right there with you. Things are kind of shaky right now in Raleigh, and you know, NC State's trying to get some momentum going, but it's going to be a tall task for them.
Yeah, this is you know, we already talked a little bit off air, but it's an interesting game between two teams that really should have each beaten Clemson. NC State, in a lot of respects, showed the way to take Clemson down to the wire and then not finish. I mean, it's still amazing to me that that field goal didn't go through the uprights down there in Death Valley, and I'm still a little bit surprised by the idea of playing for a college kicker to kick a 30-some yard field goal at the end there. But can you go ahead and give us a sense of the basic feeling of where things are in Raleigh as they're approaching this game? Where is this team as they're getting ready to host Florida State?
You know, I think they're just they're looking to try and find some momentum. That Clemson loss was big for NC State. You mentioned the kick they missed. I think looking back on it, they probably would have ran the ball another time or two. But up to that point, they'd already been called for 13 penalties, had a couple fumbles. I think they feel like if you get it inside the 10-yard line and have it centered in the middle of the field, you should be able to make a kick with a scholarship kicker. And at least that's the expectation sometimes.
Yeah, but there's a reason for hashtag college kickers.
Right, right. And that game's just sort of snowballed. And I think probably more than anything else, though, what's caught up with NC State has just been the grind of the schedule. I think Florida State's probably facing this as well. But when you look at what NC State's been through – the last 4 weeks, you know, they hosted Notre Dame in a hurricane, which NC State won that game, but it was a very physical contest in non-ideal conditions. And then you go on the road for two games against Clemson and Louisville. I don't think anybody in the country has been asked to do that. You know, that's two tough opponents, two top 10 teams on the road back-to-back weeks. And I just think that kind of caught up with them heading into Boston College, who, given Boston College hasn't been a successful team the last couple of years, there's one thing you can always label them, and that's physical. And I think they've just worn down. And the sense I got the last few days out in practice is they feel motivated by the challenge of Florida State coming to Raleigh, because that's been a team where over the last 10 or 15 years, for a variety of reasons, NC State's had some success in Raleigh against.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a house of horrors for Florida State in Raleigh. Carter Finley has not been hospitable to even some of Florida State's better teams in recent years. I mean, I remember being in the box as NC State went up by 21 against the Jameis Winston-led Florida State team in 2014 that ended up going to the college football playoff. So, you know, this is... It's never an easy place to play for Florida State for some reason. Now, I do actually think it's one of the better environments in the ACC. Certainly, you put Clemson and Florida State as the sort of two bell cows in terms of ACC football environments. But the NC State fan base is, I think, in a lot of ways more of an SEC fan base in sort of the makeup and the way that the fans tend to approach fandom and cheering and you know all the aspects that go to creating a good college football atmosphere than they are to say some of their Tobacco Road brethren, and it's a pretty tough place to play. It's loud it's one of those places where actually the stands are closer to the field than in a lot of other places, which sort of accentuates the level of sort of suffocating level that you can get when fans get up to a fever pitch, and I think that's underrated. But beyond that, beyond just environment and how Carter Finley has not been a good place for Florida State to visit in recent years, what do you think coming into this game is NC State's sort of one thing that they're going to circle that they say, okay, if we can do this and we think we can do this, then we can beat Florida State. What's that one thing that they can circle as their emphasis coming into this game?
Well, I know all week they've talked about being able to get back to running football. That they struggled with it the last couple of weeks for a variety of reasons. You know, Louisville and Boston College are both very good against the run. I think they going into each game, both of them had two top 10 rush defenses, and NC State just struggled mightily on the ground in both of those games. You know, looking at Louisville, I mean, 25 carries for 14 yards, that's not going to beat anybody. Boston College wasn't any better, 23 carries for 31 yards. And we're talking about a team who the first six games of the year, Matt Days, their starting running back, had five 100-yard games just by himself. And then you factor in Nyheim Hines and Jalen Samuels in the jet sweep game, the running quarterback. They've worked in some run principles with their quarterbacks. I mean, they were really good on the ground the first five or six games. I actually thought against Clemson, that was the difference in the fourth quarter. Was NC State just lined up? I mean, they ended that game. People forget to set up that field goal. NC State ended the game with a 6-minute drive at Clemson, where I think they had 10 runs on 14 plays. And doing that in that environment against Clemson's front is really, in my opinion, really impressive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Clemson knew NC State was going to run the football, and it really didn't matter. And I think that's probably been the last couple of weeks the biggest question mark is where's their running game gone? You know, obviously against Louisville, I think 2 minutes into the second quarter, Matt Days went out with an injury, and he didn't return. So that hurt them a little bit in that game. But really, against Boston College, they just couldn't run the football. And I know all week they've talked about we've got to find a way to get back to running the football. I think you're going to see a commitment to it. You're going to see them try and stick with it. Maybe their hope is it can shorten the game a little bit and kind of keep them in the game. But really, they're going to try and establish a running game. And then also the other thing I think they're going to do is they're going to look to get their tight ends and slot receivers going. You know, against Boston College, Jalen Samuels, who's probably their best skill position player outside of Days, had just one touch. And that's a season low for him. I mean, he's a guy who came in leading the team in receptions. And they really move him all over the field. He plays tight end. He plays slot receiver. He plays wing back. He plays H-back. They'll play him in the backfield. I mean, they move him all over. And to just get one touch, they were criticized a lot about that this week. And I think he's the guy they're going to try and get involved early and often against Florida State's linebackers and safeties.
Yeah, and that's a scary proposition for Florida State coming into this game, because that is precisely where Florida State's weakest, is at those linebacker and safety positions, covering athletic or difficult matchups downfield. They've not been very good in that area, particularly since both Derwin James and Nate Andrews were hurt, and then of course playing this week without Trey Marshall in the first half, that's going to be a tough deal, because Samuels, I think you can make the case, is the best sort of tight end H-back or whatever, however you want to categorize him. He's probably the best at whatever he is in the conference, and is a guy that's going to be probably a pretty dangerous matchup guy in the NFL for whatever team decides to draft him. He's one of those guys you kind of expect a team that approaches things like the Patriots to want to put on their roster because of the matchup issues that he causes. And that's exactly what Florida State does not want to have to face right now without Trey Marshall for the first half, and with the issues that they've had in terms of coverage on the interior of their back seven. So it's going to be an interesting matchup there. And looking at the numbers here, it is remarkable when you look at the NC State running game. You know, you go 5.13 yards per carry against Wake Forest, 3.08 yards per carry in the monsoon. I'm not even sure monsoon is strong enough for a strong enough word for what happened in that Notre Dame game. I mean, that was,
right.
I'm not even sure what game that was, but that didn't resemble football all that much. It was somewhere between water polo and you know, basically trying not to drown, I think. But 3.8 yards per carry in that one, 4 yards per carry against Clemson. And like you said, they ran the football at will on that last drive against Clemson, which was shocking to me watching that game. And it was even more surprising when they decided not to just keep doing it and run the football into the end zone on that last drive. But but then they go from 4 yards per carry to 0.56 yards per carry for Louisville against Louisville and 1.35 yards per carry against Boston College. So, I mean, that puts numbers to what you were just talking about. And that's a really, really big difference. Now, the question for me is, how healthy is Matt Days at this point? Because he really has been the engine that's helped that running game go all year. And when he went out against Louisville, that really changed the game.
Yeah, and I think he's healthy. I think against Louisville, it was more of a concussion issue. So it wasn't an ankle or an arm or something that could maybe limit him physically. Although, I mean, I guess there is a case to be made where you're at mentally coming back from a concussion injury. But I think he's healthy. I think it's just more of trying to get him going and really featuring him and feeding him. You know, against Boston College, I mean, just as a team, NC State had just 23 carries. Now, I think a lot of that dealt with the scheme you're facing. I know I don't know if Florida State's played BC yet, but historically, they're a team where they're just really strong in the middle, and a lot of teams that have success against them, you really got to kind of attack them on the perimeter. And NC State was trying to do that, so they didn't really get the running game going from just feeding it. And I think that was more of the mindset of what I've heard from them this week. It's not just strictly the numbers with them. We got to stay with it. I know Doran mentioned the Clemson game in particular, where he said, I think it was their first five carries in that game. He said they averaged about a carry or two a carry. And that didn't stop them from running the football. They stuck with it, and then eventually they just sort of wore down Clemson's defensive front, at least in their mind, in that game. And that's kind of where they want to go back to. And then the hope is, if you can wear down a defensive front, you'll obviously be more successful running the ball in the third and fourth quarter. So I think it's more just placing an emphasis on the running game and featuring Days more than they had the last couple of weeks.
So one other thing before we flip over to talking about the NC State defense, one other thing on the offensive side, Ryan Finley has been the primary quarterback on the year. Now, Jalen McClendon has come in a few times, notably against Notre Dame, more as a running option at the quarterback position. But, you know, NC State has been a sort of the surprising, in many respects, feeder program for some NFL quarterbacks over the last few years, which is one of the reasons that they've been so competitive against Florida State over those years. Where does Finley fit in terms of what he brings to the table and how he projects to be able to manage the game and challenge the Florida State defense with a guy like Samuels on the inside as a passer and just in terms of a game manager? Where does he fit in terms of what he brings to the table? Familiarize Florida State fans with Ryan Finley, if you can.
Yeah, you know, he's a transfer from Boise State. He actually arrived at NC State in August, so it was a little surprising to us that he won the job. You know, most of us believed Jalen McClendon would be the starter, who had been in the program now for going on 3 years. But Finley just came in, and he's familiar with the offense. You know, the new offensive coordinator, Eli Drinkwitz, came from Boise State, so there was some familiarity there. And I think game manager is probably the right way to label him. You know, he's done a really good job of getting them in their plays and getting them into ideal situations. They give him a lot of freedom at the line of scrimmage to make some checks and audibles based on what he sees from the defense. And he's been doing that a lot. I think he's an accurate quarterback. You know, he's really, really accurate underneath underneath coverage and getting the ball out in tight spaces. I think he's done a great job there. He struggled a little bit with his accuracy deep, but that's a variety of issues. It's also the protection game, where a lot of those throws he's had some pressure. There's been struggles at times for the NC State receivers creating the separation you like to see a lot of times for quarterbacks. But with that being said, he's also completed some deep balls. So I think he's had a really good start to the year. I know you look at the numbers strictly and they're solid, 13 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's completing 62% of his passes against Boston College. I thought he had a really good game, both of the interceptions he had, I didn't think either one were his fault. If you go back and watch those two plays, one was a they had Matt Days running a wheel route down the seam, and I mean, he put the ball on Days' hands, who bobbled it, and it was just picked off by the guy trailing him. Days just bobbled it and fell down, and the linebacker in trail coverage caught it. I mean, it was a great play by the linebacker. And then the second interception was a bad route from the receiver. You know, on the final play of the game for the NC State offense, they were at the, I think, the 3-yard line looking to tie the game up. And Finley threw a fade, and the receiver ran a slant. And you can't, you know, you can't do that. And the DB just picked it off. So I think the numbers are a little bit skewed in terms of the interceptions, because I think he's played better than they suggest. But he's going to take shots, and he's going to be aggressive. And I think they're anticipating man coverage from Boston, from Florida State. I know that they got a lot of man coverage against Clemson, and they ran some man beater plays to try and get their slot guys and their running backs in some ideal matchups. And I think that's what you're going to see against Florida State, assuming they do see that man coverage, because I think State's question is going to be, are we going to be able to protect against Florida State's defensive front? So I think you're going to see Finley and State look to get the ball out quickly to their receivers in a variety of different ways. You're going to see some three-step drops and some back shoulder throws. They do a lot of back shoulder throws. You're going to see some fades. They really mix it up with their passing game, and I think that's what you're going to see from him.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and flip it over then to the defensive side of the football. The thing that stuck out to me when I've watched NC State this year is their defensive line, which is, I think, one of the better defensive lines in the conference, maybe one of the more underrated defensive lines in the country, actually. That there's some real talent. There's some legitimate talent on that defensive line. Can you familiarize Florida State fans with the strengths and weaknesses of this Carolina defense, and what approach you expect them to take against Florida State on offense in this game?
Yeah, well, you know, NC State's not a team like Florida State where you're littered with 4- and 5-star kids all across the roster. I mean, they're just not built that way. But to Dave Doran's credit, I think the defensive line has been where they've landed their highly regarded talent. You know, you look at Kentavious Street, who's a junior. I mean, he had offers from everybody coming out. He was a 4-star kid. He was a 5-star by one service.
Yeah, he chose NC State over Florida State, as I recall.
Right, right. He was down to Florida State, Georgia, Miami, LSU, and NC State. And, I mean, he's an in-state kid, which obviously helped NC State there. But, I mean, he's a really talented guy who's starting a defensive end for him. He's got 4.5 sacks on the year. Bradley Chubb, I think, is their best defensive lineman. He's sort of the new-age hybrid-type lineman. He came to NC State as an outside linebacker, played his first year as a true freshman at outside linebacker, moved to defensive end last year. I think maybe some Florida State fans might remember him a little bit from that game against NC State last year. They actually ran him in a zone blitz pressure, and he had, I think, the interception that forced Golson out the game. They dropped him into coverage, and they yanked him and put in McGuire at that point. But Chubb's had a really good year. He's got 6 sacks in 8 games. He leads the team in sacks and tackles for a loss. He's a kid who they think could potentially go pro at the end of this year just because of how versatile he is with that linebacker background. But just looking at NC State's defense as a whole, the number one thing they try and do is they try and stop the running game. They haven't really hid that fact. You know, I mean, just looking at the numbers, the numbers don't really say a lot, just because they have already played like Florida State. They played Clemson and they played Louisville, who are two good run teams. But State right now 17th in the country against the run. They played Louisville as well as anybody. I think that's the game that really stood out to me in terms of their rush defense. You know, when you look at Louisville's game log against most teams, I mean, their rushing game, they were averaging almost 8 yards a carry against pretty much everybody. I mean, and that's with Lamar Jackson and how dynamic he is. And even though NC State struggled in that game from a score standpoint, they held Louisville to just 3.7 yards per carry, which I think is outstanding against Louisville. I think the next lowest was maybe 5.8 that Louisville had all year. So that just tells you how well they played against them with defending the run. And that's where it starts with NC State. You know, against Clemson, they did a really good job. I mean, as a team this year, State's allowing just 3.2 yards per carry. So their hope is they can go out there and priority number one is going to be to try and stop Dalvin Cook. Obviously, everybody, I'm sure, says that when they play Florida State, and that's not an easy task. But you see NC State try to commit to that because their strength is their defensive front. You know, they're starting four juniors on their defensive line, and we're talking juniors who've started or played a lot since their true freshman year. So there's a lot of experience up there, a lot of size and athleticism. And I think as a whole, if you look at NC State's team, a lot of people talk about Matt Days and Jalen Samuels and guys like that, but I think the strength of their team is their defensive line.
Yeah, that's been the thing that stuck out to me this year. Now, the question is, you know, how they are able to limit Florida State in the running game, because that's the one. I mean, this is strength on strength, right? I mean, Florida State can run the football, but has struggled on passing downs. I think one of the more interesting things in this game is if Florida State does get off schedule, can Florida State protect against a very good defensive line yet again? And can DeAndre Francois get rid of the football quickly enough to really make that NC State secondary pay? And the secondary has not been a real strength from what I've seen so far, but it's not in the bottom half, I don't think, of the secondaries that Florida State's played this year either. So, you know, it's going to be, I think, a really interesting game as we sort of look at the strength on strength matchup on that side of the ball, a weakness on strength matchup on the other side NC State offense versus the Florida State defense, in terms of Samuels versus some of those coverage guys inside. There's enough there to really make this, I think, a concerning game for Florida State fans and to give some reason for hope in Raleigh for an upset yet again. Given all that, what do you think? I mean, you've paid plenty of attention to both of these teams all year. What do you see happening in Raleigh on Saturday night?
Man, to be honest with you, Jason, we had you on our podcast earlier, and you hit on this a little bit as well. I think it's all going to come down to where both of these teams are mentally. And I know when I was speaking with our host on our podcast, he asked me the same question. And I just remember telling him when NC State faced Louisville, the week before Louisville had played Duke, and they didn't play well at all. Duke actually had a chance to win that game. And I know a lot of NC State fans were coming off the Clemson game and saying, well, look, Louisville almost lost to Duke. We can get that one. And I was trying to tell everybody, look, you're not going to play the Louisville that Duke played. That's just not going to happen. Because I just remember that game. I mean, they played Duke on a Friday night, and they did not play well at all. And all they did on Saturday was probably watch NC State and Clemson. And they saw how well NC State played Clemson, and mentally, that's going to get you ready, and not to mention the fact that you didn't play well. And I know with NC State, I think they're not going to play like they did against Boston College playing Florida State, because I do think they're going to have some confidence just because of some of the past success of teams in Raleigh. I mean, they're going to be motivated, and I'm definitely not saying for sure I think NC State's going to win that game, but I just think the mental aspect is going to play a major role for both teams, because – I feel like the bigger question is going to be, where's Florida State at after the game against Clemson? Because NC State didn't hide the fact. They think there was a hangover from that loss they had. They really felt like they had Clemson beat. And the problem for them was, not only did they have a hangover, but they were also having to go and play at Louisville. So that ends up, you end up losing by 40 there. And I think the biggest question going into this game for me is going to be, where's Florida State at mentally? Because if they're not ready to play, I think NC State's going to be ready to play, because they still do have a lot to play for. You know, they're on a three-game losing streak right now. And they've been on the road for a while. I mean, they've had back-to-back weeks on the road, and then they had the Boston College game. And Dave Doran's still looking for a signature win. And regardless of where – I mean, this isn't your prototypical season for Florida State, but for NC State, beating Florida State would be a signature win. And I just think they're going to be motivated, and it's going to come down to where Florida State's at mentally. If Florida State comes in with the right approach, I think they're probably too talented, because, man, I'll tell anybody that listens, and I know the votes may not say this, I personally think Dalvin Cook's the best player in the country, and that includes the quarterbacks. I just think with what he has to face every single week, given some of the struggles Florida State's had throwing the ball the last 2 years, and the focus on him, and just how consistent and productive he is. And I just think when you use your eyeballs, I mean, he's the best player in the country to me. If they come in motivated and he's rolling, I think they're going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah, I think that's a fair breakdown, and it's going to be interesting, like you said, to see which team we see in this game. I mean, I don't think NC State's going to get the same team Clemson just played because of Florida,
exactly
because
right,
of Florida
right,
State's
that's what I mean.
Florida State's being in a potential hangover spot, and like you said, NC State's in an angry spot. So this is a really really interesting game, a lot of potential. If you had to put a score on it, what where are you going to go on this one? If you're willing to do that.
You know, I was asked the same question. I actually picked NC State 31-28, just for those same exact reasons. I think it's a game where I could see it going either way, just because in college football, maybe more than any sport, I really think emotions and your mental approach matters, because you have one game a week and you're dealing with college kids and there's so much going on for them. And what you said, I think perfectly suits it up. I think if the Florida State that played Clemson showed up, I'd say Florida State by 14, maybe even 21. I just don't know if they're going to duplicate that performance in back-to-back weeks and having to do it on the road against NC State. And that's not a knock on Florida State as a team from a talent standpoint, but it's just I really value the mental aspect that much. When we were talking about this game a couple weeks ago on our podcast, just looking ahead, I even mentioned that. I said, I think that game sets up well for NC State either way. Just because if Florida State beats Clemson, you may get them coming off an emotional high. And then if they lose, where are they at mentally? Because they probably won't have as much to play for. So I just felt all along the game set up well for NC State from a mental standpoint. And I think maybe they're able to pull off that upset in the night game. I mean, this is only the second conference night game they've had at home in the last 4 years. And I think they feel like there's going to be some motivation going on there. I think the last two times they played Florida State at home at night, they won both of those games. And I just think that maybe something magical can happen for NC State on Saturday. And it's going to take that because I think that if Florida State shows up and plays the way they're capable of playing, I think Florida State wins the game by two touchdowns. I'm just not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting question. I agree with you that's really what we need to kind of find out. I mean, that's why they play these games. That's why we all love college football, is because in that respect, it's so unpredictable, and it's so, you know, people live and die with the emotions and the ups and downs of 17, 18 year old college students, and that in itself is kind of a remarkable thing.
And Jason, one more example is just, I mean, look at Louisville, Virginia. I mean, who would have thought that? You know, I'm sitting here watching NC State and Boston College play, and I check the game tracker, and Louisville's a 32-point favorite at Virginia, and they're down with a minute to go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to me. The 32-point favorite, and you're losing with a minute. I mean, they had to convert a 4th-and-3 and go down and score a touchdown to win that game. I mean, it's just each week's different, and you just never really know.
Well, look at those Pete Carroll teams that lost to 50-point underdogs. I mean, I think they lost at one point to a 49-point underdog. I mean, that's a well-coached Southern Cal team, and you know that's college football.
and that's why I tend to praise. I mean, look, I cover NC State. I mean, this is a program where, I mean, the most wins they've ever had in a season is 11, and they did that just once, and they haven't won an ACC championship since 1979. So obviously, we've not seen a lot of great success in football, but that's why I tend to give these programs like Alabama or Florida State a ton of credit for churning out 12-win seasons, because a lot of people say it's easy, but I don't think it is. I mean, I don't think it's easy when every single week you've got a bullseye on your back. I mean, every single week you play, you are a Super Bowl for somebody.
Yeah, nothing is harder than sustaining success.
right. Yeah, and to be that successful, man, I mean, I know these coaches, they get criticized a lot for not winning 13 games every single year. It's not easy. It's just not easy.
On that note, thank you, James, for joining us. Once again, this has been James Henderson from PacPride.com. If you want to learn anything about NC State, football, basketball, anything else pertaining to NC State athletics, PacPride.com is your go-to place. once again, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us, James.
Definitely, Jason, anytime.
All right, that's going to do it for us by and large for this preview edition of the NC State game. The more I think about it, the more I think Florida State probably has some success on the ground in this game. I think they're going to wind up getting a couple plays from Dalvin Cook, but this is going to be an interesting one. I think it's going to be difficult for Florida State. Does wind up leaving Raleigh as with a victory. I think it's going to be a close one, relatively close, not you know, some 21-28 point game, but I do think Florida State wins by a possession or so, and maybe 10 points somewhere in there. I'm ultimately going to go with Florida State winning something like, say, 34 to 24, somewhere in that range, with about a 65% win probability in this game. But that'll do it for us here today, once again, on the Unconquered Podcast. Before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which will cover the outcome of the NC State game. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.